This episode of the Griffey Boys is sponsored by Quick Feet. Quick Feet offers the simplest, most effective way to customize your skates, ensuring you're perfectly positioned for every pivot and turn when making plays. Simply slide one, two, or three Quick Feet inserts in your existing insoles, giving you more power and stability on ice. Whether you're competing at the highest level, skating as a hobby, or guiding others as a coach, Quick Feet will provide the ultimate enhancement for anyone looking to maximize their performance. Head over to quickfeet.com now to unlock a 10% discount with the promo code CurfewBoys10 and skate into a new era of on-ice performance. Elevate your game with Quick Feet, where every stride counts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Curfew Boys podcast. Myself, Sammy, with Mr. No Longer in Florida, Anthony.
You had to introduce me that way.
I just
say that I'm not in Florida. Like, fuck.
Well, man, because last time we spoke, you were Mr. Florida Man for like a good chunk of the year, it seems. And now you're back home. Why? We still don't know. I'm sure You probably still don't know why you're back home.
It's coming. It's coming soon.
The warmer weather's coming, you mean?
Yeah, a bit of both, but maybe an official Florida move. I don't know. You never know. Life. We'll see what the cards, how the cards play out, right? But I'm done.
True. You don't know. You never know what life throws your way. When life gives you lemons, you. I don't know. I don't know the rest of that phrase. When life gives you lemons, and then it's just Leonardo DiCaprio on the fucking in his Lamborghini from Wolf of Wall Street. That's the only image I have. Excellent movie, fucking amazing scene. But yeah, welcome back, Anthony. Hope you had a good time. I'm sure you and the family
had a fantastic time. Didn't want to come back home, but the positive, because you got to look at positive in life. Mm-hmm. It came down. Landed in Montreal, and I saw no snow on the floor, and that just made me really happy.
Snow seems to be gone, man. I'm okay. I'm gonna be 100% honest with you. The only disappointment I had about this winter, and it's been the story of maybe the past three winters, I barely had any opportunity, or never had an opportunity to go play outdoor hockey.
Well, that's been, you know, my neighbor, well, not my neighbor, a friend of mine who lives down the street. He's been trying to build an ice rink in his backyard for two years now. And I mean, we only had two snowfalls this year.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been cold. So I'm not complaining about that. But looking at the negative side of us being hockey fans and hockey players, it did suck that we couldn't play outdoors this year or last year.
I think the last time I played ODR was when we all got together at the rink next to your place.
And that was like three winters ago.
It was like 3 winters. I remember that night being cold, but it was still fun. And it's not to open that can of worms, but I'm kind of worried about like where the world is going, and like how us as Canadians are at least here in Montreal. I can't speak for Western Canada, but at least here in the East, at least, I don't know. I'm worried that, you know, maybe my future generation, my kids won't be able to, I don't know. I know I'm going way too far ahead, but it's just cause I love doing it. I think we all love doing it as Canadians, but fuck, just not being able to do it this winter, kind of a bit of a crappy feeling. But I'm not gonna complain about the cold, though. Like, nobody likes the cold.
Yeah, for sure.
So look at that. Listen, before we begin, a reminder to all our viewers and listeners that this episode is sponsored by Quick Feet. Quick Feet offers the simplest, most effective way to customize your skates, ensuring you're perfectly positioned for every pivot and turn when making plays. You can simply slide one, two, or three of these Quick Feet insoles, and you know, it'll give you more power and stability on the ice. You know, whether you're playing at a competitive level, the highest level you could possibly play at, or if you're just skating for fun, or if you get a chance to play ODR elsewhere outside of Quebec, QuickFeed will provide the ultimate enhancement for anyone looking to maximize their performance. Head over to quickfeed.com. That's QUUIKfeet.com. That's QUUIKfeet.com. And unlock a 10% discount with the promo code CurfewBoys10, all caps, CurfewBoys10, CurfewBoys10. Skate into a new era of an on-ice performance. Elevate your game with Quick Feet, where every stride counts. Anthony, yours is here. I have it, and I can guarantee.
I can't wait to use them.
I can guarantee you, being the coach of your son's hockey team, when you put these on, you will be the next up and coming Scotty Bowman, and the kids will be the kids will be impressed by your skating. But all jokes aside, this actually works very well. Like, you weren't on last episode when I was explaining to Adrian and Joey, but what I had played, like, I really felt the difference in my skating. Very, very, very quick and easy to, pun intended, quick and easy to get used to. Like, you actually feel a difference in within your strides and within your push, and it doesn't take long to get used to it. So
I'm looking forward to trying them. I know you have my pair waiting for me. We have three more practices left before the season ends, and then we might have like a parents versus kids game night on the ice. So I should be on the ice four more times before the season ends.
So make sure you get it.
I'm looking forward to trying them out, and awesome. You'll get my review on probably the next episode or two. So
that sounds good. So look, let's get right into it. Last episode, which was episode 200, actually.
And
right now we're hitting episode 201. It's crazy to think when we look back how this all started. But episode 201. Look, last episode, myself, Joey, and Adri, we obviously recorded an episode the night of trade deadline. I know before that, you selfishly expressed how you didn't want a player like David Savard to get traded, and I think the general consensus amongst Habs fans is, you know, we all love what David Savard brings to the team, what he brings in terms of a leader to the young players, especially the young defensemen. And you want to keep him for one more year for the rest of his contract. And, you know, there were some that say he's got value. We all know the type of defenseman he could be during the playoffs for a team that needs him to just be the number six penalty killer. And obviously things didn't turn out that way. He's staying with the team. And I think I have to admit to you as well that it's a good move, because the more and more we watch this guy, I mean, he does the same thing every game, but I think we realize it now more than ever, the fact that he is staying, even after he said, I want to stay with this team. I want to stay with this rebuild, with this core. You see, like, you actually notice that, my God, like, if in the near future, if the young defensemen of this team get better, like we hope and they project are, a lot of it has to do with this because of David Savard being in the locker room and in the lineup.
100%. And I know I expressed that I wanted to keep him and I'm happy he stayed, but the only negative thing I have to say about that, what worries me, and this is a perfect example of what happened on trade deadline, is the whole Allen situation. Mm-hmm. Now, I told you guys, and we all said it, but I had, last season of the Curfew Boys and last season of the Habs, we had said that Allen should get traded in the off season because he had a lot of value from what he showed last season. And then they waited too long. And with the three goalie rotation this season, and didn't give him enough ice time, and the ice time that he had was pretty shit. His numbers were not that great this year.
Yeah.
And we got rid of him, which I'm glad he's gone, because we don't need this three goalie rotation and we need to focus on the rebuild and finding a new number one goalie and a good backup goalie, which I'll get into that after when we talk about Primo.
Yeah.
But speaking of Allen, we got rid of him for nothing. We did not get what we could have gotten, I believe, last season. I'm not saying we deserve a superstar for him, but we could have got a first round or a bit more assets than what we got rid of for this season. And that being said, it's because we waited too long and his value diminished because not enough ice time this year. The ice time that was given to him were not good numbers that he was showing. And again, value just depreciated.
Yeah.
Savard now. So back to Savard now. What worries me is if we do that same mistake. Because right now, this season, as much as I love Savard and I'm happy he's here and he's going to give the experience to the young team, the youngsters that we have, especially, you know, our defensive core right now and our you know, our depth in defense is insane coming up. And you need a guy like Savard to keep these guys to grow and gain that experience. So I'll be happy keeping him if he stays the rest of the season, which of course, and the whole other season next year to give that experience to potentially Leighton Hudson and everybody else.
Yeah.
But if he leaves this summer, then I'll be pissed because what was the point of keeping him for the last 22 games? You know what I'm saying? And if he leaves in the summer and we get no assets out of him, we could have gotten good assets this trade done because his value was fucking high.
I don't see him getting traded at, let's say, the draft, for example, or any time during the offseason.
But wait, hold on. He's got one more season.
Yeah, he's got 1 year left on his contract.
Ah,
yeah,
I understood he was
so
gone.
So listen, actually,
scratch everything I just said. Sorry.
Well, I do get what you're saying, because what if next season he doesn't have as good as this? It could happen. What if next season he's not as, I mean, it's not that he's going to get any better. Like, he is who he is. He's at that age now where, like, this is who he is. Like, and if he does spiral downwards because of injury or what have you, just because he's a year older, you know, the game maybe is getting a lot faster for him, then will his value diminish? Like, instead of being able to get a first round this year, will we be able to get maybe a third or fourth? So that part I get. I just personally don't think he's going. I don't think he's going anywhere. How he plays next year might determine whether he gets traded at the deadline, because it'll be his final year of his contract. I personally think he didn't go anywhere this trade deadline that just passed because he still has a year left. And I personally think so. And they needed to retain Jake Allen's contract to the maximum. So the maximum is 3 contracts. We already have 2. With Jake Allen is now 3. And I know you, and I still think the return is, to me, is better than what I ever thought we could get for him. I thought we were going to get either a 4th-round pick or maybe a minor league player, but we got a 3rd conditional. And, you know, he's got to play 40 games next year, and New Jersey has to make the playoffs. And if New Jersey stays healthy next year, if they have a healthy Dougie Hamilton and a healthy Jack Hughes, Luke Hughes is going to get better. Simon Nemec, 2nd-round pick after Juraj Slafkovský. If he gets better, if Jake Allen stays healthy, it could happen. Could he play half the season? That's a big question mark. But them making the playoffs, New Jersey, I personally think if they stay healthy, might have a chance. And if that becomes a 2nd-round pick, that's not so bad.
It's not so bad at all. And back to Savard, now that I misunderstood, I thought it was his last season this year. So having that one more year, you can look at it 2 ways, okay? So if you know how a contract season year looks for a lot of players, outperform because they want to get their contract or go to a team, right? So that could give us the advantage of keeping him one more year, because we might even get more value next trade deadline than this trade deadline. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, back to your comment about maybe one more year will depreciate his value because he's going spiral down, he's not performing. I don't care about that, because one more year with him in the dressing room is all we need. Because
I agree.
It's the dressing room situation for me now, okay? Because at the end of the day, we're not winning the cup this year. We're not going to probably win next year. We're not going to be contending next year, okay? Yes, Jory, I'm actually being realistic. And but with all these young defensemen coming up in our depth, having a Savard in the dressing room, good or not good? I mean, we all know he's good. He's proven it this season. So that's done. Like, you know, the Ghoulies you know, are watching this guy play, and he's just a good presence in the dressing room. So next year, the advantage that we might have is, yes, he might have more value at the end of the year because it's his contract year. He might outperform and just tell everybody, I want more money the year after, or whatever. But again, even if he declines, it doesn't matter. if he declines on the ice, it doesn't mean that he's declining in the dressing room, because it's
not at all, for sure.
It's going to give value to these young players, especially the young players that are coming up next year.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, well, you have, I mean, Logan Mailloux is going to for sure fight for a spot. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's playing well. He got another point tonight, and Laval just won right now, like as we're speaking, and the Toronto Marlies won. So Laval actually holds the last spot in their division, the last playoff spot. So they have to maintain that. But all that says is, if he's there for a kid like Logan Mailloux, even if Mailloux could take some tips from him during the preseason, David Reinbacher too. Now he's a couple of days away from coming because of the standings of the teams in the Swiss league. I'm going to mispronounce the name. Olten lost, so Reinbacher's team doesn't have to do a play-in series to see who gets relegated down to a tier below. Blah, 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 blah. All that to say is Reinbacher is coming to North America within the next week or so. But there's going to be him next year. Lane Hudson, like you mentioned as well. He's going to sign a contract at the end of his college season. Absolutely. One of these kids is going to try to crack the lineup. Absolutely. I could foresee maybe one of them almost maybe making the Canadiens, if not, get called up. Having a guy like Savard there to kind of guide them the same way he's been guiding Caden Gooley, same way he's been guiding Arbor Jacki. Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
And I'm going to say something about in the topic of you just said Gooley. You know, you can already, I'm not saying it's coming from Savard, but there's not many players made like Savard anymore this generation of hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, like those defensemen that are not scared of the puck, who love to block, who are just, you know, like the Scott Stevens back then, and the guys who are not afraid to get hurt or get puck.
Remember Josh Georges? He was a shot blocking machine. Yeah.
And exactly. So like Savard is like at the end of that era of those kind of players. So all these new defensemen, you don't see that anymore. You still see it. I'm not saying it's out of the game, but it's not as present like we used to see it. And we'll get into the game of Boston because I want to talk about Columbus. But just a quick, from what I noticed in the Boston game, because I was there yesterday, I kept an eye on Gooley pretty much all game because he stood out.
Okay.
He was blocking shots. He was doing a lot of stuff. And I think that's coming from Savard.
Oh, 1,000%. I've said it before. Like, Caden Gooley's almost modeling his game a little bit off of Savard because they were paired in Gooley's rookie season, was paired with him, but he's still, you watch, even though they're not paired now, but like you watch a veteran like him do that, of course that's going to inspire you to, you know, play the same way
anymore as much. And now you're, you know, just like I said before, Savard is at the end of those kind of players, and you want to bring that back because that's what you need, that gritty.
Yeah, he's a pure defensive defenseman.
Yeah,
like he's, and like from a bit of the old school era, like the 2010 era.
And you want to bring that back? And I think, like I said, I think having him in the dressing room with his young kids, I'm already seeing it in Gooley. Imagine Mailloux and fucking Nate Hudson. I mean, seeing that on your team, you know, if you're growing with a young team and everybody's playing the same way because the new generation is. You know what I mean? Like, they're just not that type of style of hockey. They're just more talented than being that blocker.
It's a lot having of skill.
It's more skill than being that, you know, that wall, you know? Sheldon Surrey and those guys, you know? So I think having Savard one more year with all these young players coming is just going to change. Again, having a Gooley or a Mailloux or Hayden Hudson, watching that. It'll spark that to come back.
It'll spark the fire in them to really, like, it's like, wow, like, seeing our veteran do that, like, it'll spark the flame in them, the fire in them to really perform to the best of their capabilities. And it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be shut down defensemen and block shots, but it's just, it gets the bench fired up. Mm-hmm. And let's look back to the game against, I want to say it was against the Buffalo Sabres. We're on the penalty kill. He blocked like a good 2-3 shots. blocked a shot with his skate, lost his blade, so was stuck on one foot again. It seems to be the thing now. It happened against Columbus a couple of nights ago. Blocked another shot while he was on one foot, you know, laid down, like sprawled down, kind of like Hal Gill style to block a shot that when the puck was cleared, you know, like everybody just kind of like forgot about the other team going at the puck and they all went and pushed Savard back to the bench. And you just see everybody was high-fiving him, tapping on the head. Arbor Jacki, like, was praising him. And Arbor Jacki is profiting from playing with a guy like Savard. It's because of Savard. I'm not going to say it's entirely because of Savard that Arbor Jacki is playing a lot better. Arbor Jacki put in the work. But when you learn from a guy like that, when you have a guy like that you paired up with, like, he'll make you better. So, absolutely. I really think he could be a mentor one more year to the up-and-coming younger defenseman. It's exciting to see. I personally think, I don't know if the Canadians give out an unsung hero award at the end of the season. I know they do the Molson Cup winner. Dude, David Savard this year, he's like the quiet hero of this team. Like just does what he has to do, blocks shots, kills penalties, makes a simple play in his own zone. He deserves a lot of credit, a lot of credit.
I couldn't agree more. Agree more to that. He's the unsung hero this year. He's that guy. He's the spotlight this year. And it's crazy how two seasons ago we said that he was a political move, trading for a bag of pucks. And now we're praising this guy. And this episode, I mean, we spoke about it two episodes ago when I was there and said how things have changed. And now we're saying that he's the give him an award for the unsung hero of the year. Like it's crazy. It's crazy how time has changed. But hey, that's, you know, we got to get credit where it's due. That being said, I wanted to bring up one thing since we're in this topic and then we'll get into the games. But speaking of Gouley and Jacki and us having the crazy depth in the defensive sides, and potentially we can't keep all these defensemen. Like we don't have space for everybody. And we have a lot, which is a good and bad thing. The good is because now we have a lot of assets to get rid of and get some good returns, right? Because we are lacking forwards. We're lacking that power forward, that talented skill player like we all been wanting. Nothing we don't have, but we don't have enough.
Yeah, but another top six.
But now with this crazy depth that we have, what worries me is that we're going to have to get rid of to gain that star power forward. Now, who do you get rid of? It's going to be a tossing game because if you want that star forward and that power forward, it's all GMs are not going to flip a coin and say, I want a guy in the
minors.
In Laval. They're going to want a John.
Oh, of course.
Right.
Of course.
And then what worries me if that happens is like, are we making the right decision, right? Because we don't want to it. And I don't think it'll happen if that comes around because we have the right management for it. Because let's go back in time when we traded fucking McDonough for Gomez. And then look what happened to that, right? Gomez scored one goal in seven seasons. Or what was it, 7 million for one goal? Or
there was a
tracker online.
Yeah, we ended up taking his New York contract of like 7 million. And that one season, he only scored one goal. Like,
how much money he was making per goal? And it was one goal, 7 million. It was like an actual website.
I remember that. I mean, the first year he came to the Canadians was his best year, him, Gianta, Camilleri. But then after that, it went down.
I'm just worried that, but if that happens again, like you get rid of a star defenseman to get that star forward, and then if the star forward doesn't work out.
Yeah, but the difference is McDonough never played a single game for the Canadians. We see who we have been seeing so far, like who, I mean, I'm going to throw out these names, who Jordan Harris is. We see who Jaden Struble is, and we see who Arbor Jacki is. Now, out of those three, I think Arbor Jacki is untouchable, even though there's rumors that there's been multiple offers for him.
Untouchable, but the highest value out of the three.
I think so too, but I also think that's why Kent Hughes is why he refused offers for him, because I think he knows that when this team is ready to make the playoffs, they're going to need a defenseman like him. A defenseman like Arber Xhaka is a defenseman they all want.
Yeah.
Now, it has nothing to do with him being able to score or take the hardest slap shot. It's about him just playing that rough, because playoff hockey is rough. Playoff hockey is, in a sense, it can be dirty in the sense, not cheap shot dirty, but it's painful. Playoff hockey is painful. You want guys that administer pain. And Arber Xhaka is that defenseman. Caden Gooley could be that defenseman too, but at least right now, Arber Xhaka is that defenseman. Jaden Struble might actually be that defenseman too. Jaden Struble could hit. In my point of view, to me, it's Jordan Harris that's the odd man out. And again, well,
Jordan Harris has, 17 games, and they spoke about this on 690 when I was on the way to the game yesterday, is that the one player that needs to stand out for the last 17 games if he wants to get traded for that top defenseman next year, if he wants to do anything, is Jordan Harris, because he's shown what he's capable of doing. Now, it depends on the rotation that they have
with
White. Was it White? Yeah, White and who else?
Well, Colin White's a forward, but
who's rotating now?
Harris Struble and Jonathan Kovacevic.
That's it. Sorry, yeah. I don't know why I said White, but Harris needs to stand out for the next 17 games if they want to add more value to this guy at July 1st or whatever. But I'm just saying, we have so much depth and so much good players, and I wish we can keep them all, but we can't. And I hope when the time comes, we choose right. Or, at the end of the day, you might get rid of a strong player, but get a strong player in return that balances out. That's what I'm hoping for, because I love Gooley, and I know you do too.
Absolutely.
You've been like a advocate for this guy from before. So, and then again, I really paid attention to him in yesterday's game, and he's just you need a guy like that in our team.
He's a machine too, Caden Gooley.
And imagine Lane Hudson and Ayuk, if they give their potential, imagine having those three fucking
we could have the best defensive core. Like when they all reach their prime,
we could have
the best one in the league. We definitely could, and that's what's exciting. It's just the real question is who. It's like, who's the one that has to go? Who are we going to have to sacrifice? And I think it could worry Habs fans a little bit because, and again, like you said, we get so emotionally attached to these kids, and they're all good kids. Like Jordan Harris is a great kid off the ice, just him as a person. Everybody out there cannot say enough good things about this kid.
Yeah.
And but if Kent Hughes does decide to trade him, like there's personal ties, like he's known Jordan Harris since he was like, God knows, like at the age of like 10 or 12.
See, but I have more of an emotional attachment to the Jack Eyes and Ghoulies than Harris. Like if Harris goes and we get something in return, like a good return, I'd be okay with it, But the
I agree. I agree, but I'm just saying, like, if, and this is all hypothetical, can you imagine if Kent Hughes is thinking the same thing? Jordan Harris, he's the one that has to go, but like, how the fuck do you trade a kid that you practically not raised, but you watched grow up to become the pro hockey player that he is now? Like that's probably going to be a tough call down the line. But at the end of the day, who knows? It could be somebody unexpected. It could be somebody that hasn't come from Europe yet. I don't know. I'm just throwing a name out like that. But what if it's like Adam Engstrom, who we're all excited to see eventually? What if it is? What the fuck if it is David Reinbacher all of a sudden? It's like, listen, I could give you a potential top two defenseman, but give me what if it is David Reinbacher? I'm not suggesting that they should, but what if it's him? You know what I mean? Like
that's true.
You never know. What if Kent Hughes hears that, listen, there's a young player that it's just not working out with our club, but he's got potential to be top six, maybe even top line player somewhere else. What if Kent Hughes does offer David Reinbacher?
But hold on.
You never know. I'm not suggesting. Wait. I'm really not suggesting that he do that.
Think about it, Sam. We were all shocked for that draft when we were picked number three. Or no, number five. Number five.
Yeah.
We were the fifth pick. It was top offensive powerhouses available. Okay, and we're lacking that. And he went to go choose Ryan Becker when you already had a fucking shitload of defensemen in your team.
Yeah. And well, he picked him because we didn't have much on the right side. That's
fair, fair. But think about it. Yeah. We were all shocked. All fans were shocked. You see what you have on your roster, and like, but you're missing a power forward. Why'd you go here? This is a good example. Like you might be onto something. Maybe he's that we went for him to use him as
Could be,
you know, a target for a power forward, even hotter than who was available, like Cooley. Who was available
Mishkov was available.
But also there was even who was also available that we didn't take that we had a chance to get on. Who was number six?
Philly took Mishkov.
Mishkov, but there was someone else. Fuck.
I don't know. Hold on a sec. I don't know if it was Gay Perreault who I'm trying to remember. Hold on. I'm gonna go get it. But at the same time, look, I they obviously didn't draft David Reinbacher thinking that we could use this asset one day to trade for a top forward. I really don't think they went with that approach. But having said that, we could have drafted. I'm looking at Arizona picked Dmitry Shermashev, which is another defenseman. Mishkov with the Flyers at 7. Ryan Leonard with Washington at 8. So there you go. Then there was Dalibor Dvorsky with St. Louis at 10. Zach Benson with Buffalo. Braden Jaeger with Pittsburgh. Jaeger still got on defense. The other one, Axel Sandin Pelika. He's good. We're in the Gay Perreault 23 with New York. I still like the David Reinbacher pick before anybody suggests that they should trade him. But if you want value in return, you have to trade value.
Of course.
Just saying. You have to.
Well, we all know.
You have to pay high to get high. So I'm just, you. I mean, and you never know. You never freaking know. I'm excited to see David Reinbacher with Laval or Montreal. I really, really am. Don't get me wrong when I say that. If we want that top player, if it's going to happen through trade, you might have to trade your top, another top prospect. And if Reinbacher's that player, and again, depends for who. I'm just throwing a shit idea out there, but I they have to go with a forward this coming draft though. If they go with another defenseman, as much as I love that Zane Parekh kid, oh, telling you, man. Here, I'll throw a curveball out to everybody out there. But what if the Canadians trade David Reinbacher for a top forward, get that top forward, and draft Zane Parekh, who's a right-handed shot with the Canadians' top pick at the draft?
That'd be beautiful.
I'm just saying. I'm really not wishing for that to happen, but if it does, it depends who that is. Again, this is all hypothetical. It depends who the return is for Reinbacher, but if he's a top forward that everybody loves and knows has potential, and then you draft Zane Parekh on draft day. I know this isn't NHL 25 on PlayStation or Xbox, but
hey, Joey, if you're listening at this point, I was very realistic this whole episode. Now you have
I totally went
NHL 2025.
I totally went with the Sammy scenario right there, man. Like 1,000% I went there. But let's digress a little bit. You also, I think, at one point during the season said if the Canadians get rid of Caden Primo, that would be a big mistake.
Yes. So I only said that after we saw the potential in him, because this season, I don't know what happened. You know, we've been, all of us, especially you.
Do you know what happened? He's been seeing I don't think the right term is a sports psychologist, but he's been seeing like a, for lack of a better term, like a mental prep coach.
Okay, but okay, lately a lot of athletes are doing this. I know I'm going way off topic here, but I've been watching
Yoel Armia too, man's been doing that. Then look how much better he's been playing.
So I've been watching Full Swing too. It's a golf Netflix special. It's like the Formula One.
Yeah.
And a lot of these, you know, golfers are doing it. Like a lot of golfers who just went off the map started seeing psychologists, sports psychologists, and now like, you know, forgot his name. But anyways, I should have wrote his name. I forgot it. But anyways, these sports psychologists and these athlete psychologists, like, it's helping them come back to life. And if you're saying, I didn't know that Kaden was looking at one, but if he is,
it's actually
working. It's crazy. But sorry, I went off topic, but
but dude, like, the thing about Kaden Primo is, do you remember way back in his first training camp during a preseason game, he made a save and Price was the backup that night. Carey Price was the backup. And at one point he said he looks like a younger version of me.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I remember that.
So here's my thought about Kaden Primo. And I like to talk about the Columbus game since I was there. And we'll get to that later for our audience. Our audience needs to hear this story, but I really think Kaden Primo this whole time, he had the tools and he still has them. He has the tools of what it takes to be maybe not a star goalie in this league, but at least a consistent, a goalie good enough to stay in the NHL consistently. Be as in May, like a Jake Allen, who's had a long career in the NHL. He's not a superstar. He's not the best goalie out there, but he's good enough to stay. He's reliable. Even if he's a backup, he's a good one. Again, maybe Primo could be even better than that somewhere down the line. But it also goes to show that goalies take a lot more time than usual, especially for a goalie like Kaden Primo, who I'm pretty sure was drafted in the 7th round. Okay, he's not a Carey Price or an Andre Vasilevsky that are first-round picks. Okay, those guys, they're just different breeds, and that's why they're one of the best to ever play that position. But I really think Kaden Primo had all the tools that he needs to be a good goalie. It was
a mental thing.
He couldn't figure it out yet, probably. And during the COVID year, when they would put him in net, he would get destroyed. Like, you just saw. You just saw the life go out of him and the confidence.
We're also in the shadows of Carey Price, and it was really hard to, like, we always said this. I mean, I said this last season. I think Kaden Primo always had it in him. He was just in the wrong environment. And that's why I said at the beginning of the season, before he shined and whatever, I said, this guy's going to shine somewhere else. He has the tools, like you said. He has the talent. He needs to go somewhere else. He needs to get out of that dressing room. He needs to go somewhere, new environment.
I remember when you said that. Yeah.
You know, but something happened. I don't know if it's this year's management, what they're trying to do, and like they're building that the different winning culture in the dressing room, where I don't know what happened, but something sparked in him. And he's finally showing what we all saw in him. What we all thought he could be. We all said at the beginning is he was the next Carey Price, which he's not. Okay.
No, he's not.
He has a talent, and he just never showed it. And now finally he is. That being said, I'm very happy that we got rid of Allen and kept him, because I think it would have been a big mistake. Though I did say him leaving, but I've always said him leaving would be a better player somewhere else with a different coach, different team, different environment. But now that he found himself here,
yeah,
it's a fucking steal for us. Because, and I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm throwing this out there, okay, that right now there's going to be the, and having this two goalie situation, there's going to be a battle between Montembeau and Primo of who wants to be number one. We all know Montembeau is our number one goalie, right?
Yeah, right now.
But now that Primo is stepping up his game and they're going to be sharing positions, you know, night after night, there might be a fucking a competition between them two of who wants to be number one, because Primo is not going to, I think Primo found himself and he doesn't believe he's a second goalie. He wants to prove that he's a number one.
Sure. Right? I mean, but all goalies do. Yeah. That's especially him, that he's young enough. He's only 24. He's still young. So
and now we have two very good goalies. that are going to compete and add and young goalies and want to get some value in them. And you have Fowler that's coming up.
He was awarded the Hockey East goaltender of the year in his rookie year in college.
But look how it's lining up, man. You have Montembeau, who's fucking, again, 3 years ago, we all said shooting for a bag of pucks. And now we're all saying he's our number one fucking
goalie. We love him.
We all love him. So now he's our number one. Primo just came out of the fucking nowhere and he's performing and potentially wants to be a number one or a very good number two. Mm-hmm. Now you're giving value to two really good young goalies, a third young goalie who's projected to be the next Carey Price,
or at least our number one
is coming into the picture with two fucking good goalies who are fighting to be number one and gaining value. I'm telling you, the stars are aligned for this team to become. I'm saying this out loud, Joey. It's not a fucking scenario, whatever. It's not me being a typical Has fan. I am telling you right now, I'm hoping that I'm still alive for this, but this team is in the direction of a fucking dynasty. We will be the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Detroit Red Wings or the fucking Chicago Blackhawks years back when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals 3-4 years in a row and won 2 or 3. I'm telling you right now, it's coming. The stars are aligned. I'm sorry I'm going off topic.
I've been thinking about it my whole life. Caden Primo's got 1 year left, and then after that, he's a restricted free agent. I'm predicting Jacob Fowler plays one more year in college, and that gets his contract. I think next year, and don't forget, Montembeau signed an extension. He's here for another 3 years. So when Primo's contract is over, again, if they resign him, sure, for how long? But after that, they're going to have to think about signing. They're going to have to sign one or the other, either Fowler or Primo. And then after that, Montembeau is only going to have 2 years left on his contract. So as much as Montembeau right now is the number one, I think it's going to come. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I don't know. We might have another three goalie tantrum again.
I'm telling you now, with
Fowler involved, or I don't know. Like if
we're not gonna have a three goalie tantrum, we're gonna be in a position where we get rid of Primo.
Probably, and maybe.
And we're gonna have a hard emotional attachment to all three because we all want Fowler. We all love Montembeau now.
There's no way they trade Jacob Fowler.
No. But what I'm trying to say is that
It might come down to between Primo and Montembeau.
I'm telling you now, I'm saying this right now in this episode. Next year it's gonna be the battle of the goalies. And 100%. it's gonna be the Halak Price situation where they both wanted that number one, and we all knew it was Price, but Halak was performing and couldn't take it anymore and wanted to get traded because he didn't want to be Price's backup. Like no one wants to be Price's backup.
Well, after you defeat fucking Washington and then Pittsburgh, and yeah, they're putting stop signs with your name on it in the streets of Montreal. Yeah, of course you don't want to be Carey Price's backup.
Next year it's gonna be the battle of the goalies, and someone's gonna want that spot, and no one's gonna want number two, and then Fowler's gonna come.
I'll add another. What if Jakub Dobež all of a sudden is like, listen, the start of Laval's season was he looked iffy. You look at him now, he's the number one Laval, and he's playing these important games that they need to win in order to get a chance to make the playoffs. What if next season is like, hey man, he deserves a shot?
Yeah. A lot of projections, but a lot of hope here, man. It's crazy. I'm telling you, the stars are aligned. We're gonna have a good problem coming up. We're gonna have so many good pieces that we don't even know what the fuck
we're gonna
do.
We're gonna have
them.
Many good problems. I totally agree. And this is all this is part of management's plan. They're not deviating from the plan. They're sticking to it. Yep. They're not going off-road slightly. They're going down that fucking road. They know what they're doing. It's just there's just some fans out there that aren't patient enough. But that's another story.
It's typical Habs and not being patient. But again, we were all in that boat, all of us.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been through that. It's just that we snapped out of it and we finally come to realize like, shit, it's the real thing now, and we're doing it right. So I want to be patient now, because being patient now, again, I keep saying this, and I'm not being, you know, dreaming flying colors and PlayStation 25 here. I'm actually speaking from the bottom of my heart. If we do this right, I'm not saying it's going to happen, okay? Please don't stamp it, Joey, that I'm predicting this. I'm saying if we play our cards right, this team plays to their potential and the management does the right moves with all the assets we have and the depth we have, we can build that dynasty. We could. We just got to play it right. And all Habs fans need to be patient because, again, I'm not going to shit on those fans that are not patient because we've all been there for many years. But again, we've come to the era of the Bejovains, the fucking Bob Gainey's, and
it's all we're not doing that way anymore.
We're not doing that way anymore, and we're finally doing it smart. Mm-hmm. So, wake up, see what's happening.
Look at the bigger picture.
Look at the bigger picture because we have the right people doing it.
Exactly.
You know, and they proved it already. So, just be patient, and this is the time that we should all be patient.
Okay, this is a story time now.
Yeah, Columbus.
Okay, this is probably you're the one that's probably gonna have to tell this story a little bit because
so I'm in the Habs fan club. I have a Habs agent, if you want to say, I have a contact at the Habs Bell Center, and I'm in a fan club type thing, and I get emails every single day pregame. Contest, this and that.
Is it Club 1909? Are you talking about that?
Yeah, I mean the Club 1909.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And And Club 1909, and I signed up for a contest. I usually ignore the contest because I'm like, one out of a million, I'm never going to win this shit. But there was a contest I signed up a few months back. I even forgot that I signed up for this contest. And this contest was win tickets to sit in had the press box experience. Put my name in it, whatever. I totally forgot I did this. Monday morning, I get a phone call and I answered it. And I was in Florida and I get this phone call Monday, 8 a.m. I'm like, who is this? I'm like, hello, this is Anthony speaking. He's like, yes, this is blah, blah, blah from the Bell Center, Montreal Canadiens 1909 fan club. I'm like, yes. She's like, I'm sorry we're calling you last minute, but for tomorrow night's game, you won the contest for the press box experience. And I was silent. I was complete, and she's like, hello, are you still there? And I'm like, you said it was last minute. Is there a chance of me telling you that I won't be able to make it tomorrow and you give me another game? She's like, no, I'm sorry. This is for tomorrow night's game. There's a certain amount of tickets for different games and different packages, blah, blah, blah. She's like, why you can't make it? I'm like, no, I'm in Florida, and I this is a lifetime experience. I need to go to this game. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I need to go to this game. I want this experience. Can you give me another game? Can I speak to your supervisor? I was so angry.
You were negotiating. Holy
And then
fuck.
She's like, look, I'm very sorry, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, took a deep breath. And I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, okay, no, we can't get rid of these tickets. I'm not getting rid of these tickets. I need to figure something else. So I'm like, the Curfew Boys, I need to get this to people that are going to appreciate this fucking, these two tickets. So I told her, look, I know it's me who won, but can I give it to two friends of mine? She's like, of course. I might call me back at 11 o'clock. I'm going to find someone. Went in the Griffey Boys WhatsApp page. Yeah. And I told you guys about this contest. Everybody thought it was a scam. And
it's true.
For a second, I thought it was a scam too, because she did call me private number.
Yeah.
She said she was going to call me back at 11 o'clock, 11:30, sorry. Mm-hmm. It was 11:40. I didn't get that call. And thank God, because Chris only messaged me at 11:34 saying, hey, yeah, are you still available?
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, it's still available, but she didn't call me back. And then that's when everybody's like, this was a scam. This is bullshit, whatever. She ends up calling me back at 11:40. Hey, did you find someone? I'm like, yes. Gave Chris's name. It burned me a lot. But I was happy that I gave it to the right people. And now the story is yours. You can continue.
Well, Jesus. So I was scheduled to work that night. Sorry. And, you know, we all have sick hours that are ours, or personal days or personal hours that we could take off. And yeah, since Chris was the only one able to go, but he needed somebody else to go, Joey couldn't go, Zoo couldn't go, Adri couldn't go. It's like, okay, though, it's like, I gotta go to this thing. So I ended up booking off, and some of the guys were asking me to our viewers out there. Like some of the guys at work, I'm telling them, like, "Oh, guys, I'm booking off tomorrow." They're like, "Oh, is everything okay?" I'm like, "It's just something unexpected happened, an opportunity. I got an opportunity that I can't miss out." And, you know, eventually I booked off. I ended up going to the press box with my cousin Chris. And
about your experience.
Yeah, it was an awesome experience. Like it was actually really cool. You're very high up. You know, we saw like, so we got a little tour to like the lounge area, the club 1909. I don't know if it was the club 1909 or the Mise en Jeu lounge, but it's like, you know, it's the press box lounge where you could get hot dogs, you could get alcohol, you could get chips and all that. We were then brought to the players lounge, the alumni players lounge. And the only alumnus we saw were Stéphane Quintal and Yvon Lambert, but they were sitting in a corner, and you know there were other much, and apparently it's like the alumnus can go and their family members can be there too. So though they were the only two, like, so they're like, ah, go, our tour guide lady, she was all like, go and walk in. Chris and I were like, we didn't feel right going to the alumnus players lounge and like walking amongst family members, all that. Like we felt like we were stepping on toes. So we were really like, we're in that area. We were being like a little bit too respectful. Like we want to respect, you know, Quintal and Lambert. Like we didn't go up to them. We didn't go say hi to them. We let them be. But it was still pretty cool. And it wasn't that big, the lounge, surprisingly, but it was still pretty cool. Then we went. So yeah, then we went up to the press box area. And we're walking along, like, you know, the not the hallway, but like, you know, it's basically the balcony section ish before you get to the actual press box. We walk past Kirby Doc and Christian Dvorak that are just sitting there, like, and there was a big rule. It's like, don't bother the players that are sitting there. Don't bother members of the media. Like they're all working. They're all in the zone. So like. Like, so like, we're just walking by Kirby Doc, Dvorak, and like, ah, okay, well, there they are. Go to the press box with another couple that was there. And we were in between the TSN 690 press box to our left, and to our right was this is Joey's wet dream, like the stats press box, where throughout the game we kept hearing in French, 47 shot, 44 block. The 21 block. Excuse me. When Caulfield shot, 22 shot. Like they're just guys yelling at each other, stats and like what was going on during the play, block shots, hits, giveaways. Takeaways.
That's crazy.
Passing percent. Like, yeah. But the thing that impressed me the most is. Yeah, you're way high up, but you're a lot more centered and you see details on the ice that even in the stands, as close as you are sometimes in the stands, you don't see those details. You really see like the spaces between players. You see how they move and like how they read the play, if they have enough space to get past a player or if they have to make a puck. You're practically helicopter view. And throughout that entire, we couldn't scream. We weren't allowed to scream during goals.
Out of all games, goals. Shut out.
When Brendan Gallagher scores, like not even a minute in, I'm like, yeah. Oh, sorry, you know what I mean. So like, and Chris too. Chris had to calm down because we know how excited he can be. But throughout the whole game, and that was another game where Savard was just fucking. He made more saves than Cade and Primo that night. And even Primo fucking said it to everybody when he was first started the game. He's like, man, David Savard, he probably blocked more shots than I did. But I realized how like this is how scouts scout players. This is the angle they need to see to really identify how well these players can play and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like watching player highlights on film, it doesn't even come close to the press box angle. So all that to say is what was funny about this experience is that, you know, we obviously posted our Instagram stories and a day or two later, people still see it. So everyone's like, how the heck? Oh my God, look at you guys. You guys are celebrities. Oh my God, press box privilege. So, blah, blah, blah. I'm there. I'm like, yeah, we just won a contest.
So
like I'm telling you, they're like, oh my God, look at you guys. That's so cool. How did you get these tickets? How did you get? We won a contest. We got super lucky.
So I went for a pickup for the kids this week at the school when I got back, and one of the parents there that follows our podcast and loves our show, by the way, and he looks at me, he's like, you guys made it big time. Yeah. I'm like, what? Fuck, you guys really got up there. I'm like, that's crazy. You guys can go to the games now and watch it from there. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, no, your guys were in the press box this week. I'm like, you guys have a spot there now. And I was
I wish.
Congratulations. And I'm like, should I bullshit and say yes? Yeah.
Yeah, you should. 1,000% you should have.
So I looked at him and I said the same thing like you. I'm like, well, we won a contest. Yeah, we just got lucky. But yeah, people like just the perception of these posts that you're posting about that experience, people actually thought we made it, but we didn't yet. But it was still, I can just imagine how great of an experience it was for you and Chris. And
if it makes you feel any better, I know it's impossible.
It won't, but you can say whatever you want, but it won't.
I applied to there's one more game. It's March 30th. There's another press box contest that I applied for on 1909. As soon as I got home, I looked for more contests because I'm a Club 1909 member, but I never fucking checked these.
I never did it until recently. So
I applied for this contest again. And I Chris and I, we can't thank you enough, first of all. Second of all, there they gave us a Kirby Doc bobblehead and a Montreal Canadiens cap mise au jour. I have that saved for you. I will No. There's no way I could keep it. Like when I give you your quick feet insoles, I will give you a Kirby Doc bobblehead and a Montreal Canadiens cap.
We'll talk about offline, but I appreciate it. But to be honest though, like yes, it I'll say this, it really did suck when I got that phone call and I couldn't go. But I couldn't be happier to, you know. If I would have said, hey, sorry, I can't make it, give it to someone else, it would have like a waste, right? Because we have a fucking podcast. We have the right people to go to this. And you guys, especially you and Chris, like you appreciated it. And that's what to me mattered is
someone who
appreciate this experience.
We'll owe you forever. So.
I want is just tell Joey I'm right all the time. We're good, even.
So far you've been right about David Savard. You've been right about Caden Primo. So, and you might be right about a potential trade for a young defenseman for a top six forward. But the way that gate ended, and I love it. I would definitely use it as a title. Like when Caden Primo said, "It's just the beginning." There's a lot of metaphor in this rebuild. Like now, this team, it's just the beginning.
But can I just say something? I know we have a lot of good things to talk about that game. You know, 3-0 shutout.
Yeah,
but it was the worst game of the season. Halfway, like shit.
It was very deceptive because they got outshot, but it was. You know what it felt like? It felt like they lost against a shittier team. Primo got the shutout. He got another shutout against Anaheim, an even shittier team. And as much as the Canadiens got outshot, like there was never a sense that, oh my God, Columbus is going to come back. It felt like one of those things where give us your worst, it won't work. That's what it felt. It really did. Columbus was shooting a lot from the outside. And there was a couple of saves where Primo like had to really make a save, like that glove save he made at the first period. Like he looked like Carey Price doing it. I'm just saying. But and then he made a couple of like really good saves after that. The second and third period, but like I don't think there was ever a sense of urgency that, oh my God, like we need to wake up or else Columbus could beat us. It was, there was that vibe that like Columbus could give everything they got. And it's like, there was no worry. Like it's weird. So like maybe on paper, yes, it was like the stats did not go into the Canadiens' favor, but I'm telling you, like maybe this is just my perspective of it, but it was like Columbus, like they didn't have the star power. Like Johnny Gaudreau, like poor guy, he's alone. Zach Werenski on defense, he was like probably the most noticeable player out there. Poor guy's alone. He's trying to do everything. Nothing was working. So it was just one of those games where it's like, yeah, they got outshot. Maybe Columbus was a lot more in the zone than the Canadiens were in the other way around. But like, it was just, there was no worry. There was no worry of a comeback. No worry of like, I don't know, that it was weird. It was definitely a different feeling compared to the Boston game.
Yeah. So I was at the Boston game. It was a good game, but I'm going to say one thing before we get into the actual game itself. What bothers me, and this is, I spoke about this in the past, we all did, about how the game is changing and the rivalry is not there anymore. And maybe it's because of the you know, the rules of the fighting and the concussions, mm-hmm. all that stuff. But I was a bit disappointed yesterday.
Okay.
I got these tickets an hour before the game. I missed puck drop. I was actually cutting my hair. I get three phone calls. Again, I got a bunch of phone calls. My son was on my phone. He comes. Daddy, Zio Brian is calling you. I'm like, oh, no, he's probably calling you to wish me welcome back home, whatever. I'm like, just flush the call. Flushes it. Calls two more times later. Daddy's calling. I'm like, just flush it. Then my wife is calling me. I'm like, holy shit, like, did someone die? Like, something's happening. So, my hairdresser, like, stop. I answer the phone. He's like, fuck, I have a ticket to the game tonight. Do you want to come? I know it's an hour and 2 hours. I'm like, I just lost an experience on Monday not going to a fucking game. Fuck this, I'm coming. My hairdresser didn't finish my beard. I'm like, listen, stop the haircut right now. It's done. Good. He's like, are you sure? Like, I didn't finish. I'm like, just, I'm done. I need to make it to the game. I went home. I finished the beer by myself. And I just flew to the Bell Center. So, anyways. I didn't even know who the Habs were playing, you know?
You just wanted to go.
I just wanted to go. I just forgot. I find out when I arrived there that it's Boston Bruins. I'm like, fuck, you know, the original six, the Boston Montreal, like the rivalry. Yeah. And it wasn't what we used to see. Back in the day with the Lucic and the Marchand and the, you know, and...
Yeah, it's Chara.
The Chara, when the game was gritty and fucking hits and fights, and even the crowd were fighting against each other, and that's so lost in this generation of hockey, and I want it to come back so badly. I miss those days. Do you remember, Sam, back in the day?
I do.
When Facebook was hot, and... Yep. Every night, all of us, everybody at Dawson at school was after a game, there was statuses.
We went to your place, your parents' place now. Your buddy was there with his Bruins jersey.
Yeah, and we would go on Facebook and there was debates, like 180 comments of people fighting, insulting each other, Bruins fans saying bad things about the Habs. Habs now, forget it, you don't even see that anymore. And I'm okay, we all know social media, Facebook is dead, but just to say it's not there anymore, and you even see it on the ice. Like yesterday really disappointed me. Yesterday was very conservative. So let's go into the game. Like it was a conservative game. Both teams were playing very defensive. They were centered ice all game. If you look at the shots, I think it was like 18 to 15 or whatever it was. There wasn't many shots last night. They played a lot center ice back and forth. There was no hitting. There was no fighting, and it just really, I don't know. I don't know what the league needs to do to bring back that rivalry between teams, between players, between fans. I don't know. I just want that back. Completely lost.
Well, we could open up the debate about that whole division rivalry going on, like the division format. I don't know if the league tried to do it with that. It's just, I think now just with the reducing of fighting, I think that's what it is. I just think that's what it is. I also think Boston doesn't have that. I think Jim Montgomery brings a whole new winning culture to the Bruins, but it doesn't. I don't know if it, I could be wrong, but I don't know if it has that big, bad Bruins feel to it. And it could be, it's just, they're just not the team built for that right now. They're a completely different team, like without, especially without Patrice Bergeron, no Krejci, but you know, Marchand's getting older. Just it's Pasternak and Charlie McAvoy's show right now. But I don't think Jim Montgomery brings that big bad Bruins vibe. Like Claude Julien brought that. Coaches before him with the Bruins brought that. I don't think Jim Montgomery's bringing that. I think he's bringing more of a, how can I say this? Yeah, just hard work, but like through like holding each other accountable. And like sometimes it doesn't mean like you have to go start fights and all that. Like they don't have they don't have a Lucic type player. They don't have a Sean Thornton type player. They don't, you know what I mean? They don't have a Chara anymore that punishes everybody. They just don't have that anymore.
No, fair. A good point to say that for the Bruins, but I'm even generalizing, not only the Bruins, but I think I'm generalizing the whole league. I think the league has become, and this is an opinion maybe a lot of people might not like or whatever, maybe it's reality and it's the truth, I don't know, but this is how I vision it right now, how I see it from my perspective, and you see it with the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. I think this league became very entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's all about skill and talent, which is not a bad thing, right? We love to see the Jack Hughes with these fucking plays, the McDavid's going through the whole team and scoring goals. I think the league is coming, is opening up that world of we want to see skill on the ice.
Yeah, of course they want a 1,000%. But that's
which is not a bad thing. But it took away the passion and the gritty. I want to win. Now
it's all there. It's just there's no like that's what it is. It is all skill. The passion's still there, and these guys still want to win. It's just now it's a different breed of players. They're a lot more faster and a lot more skilled. And you know, like back in the 2000s, even before that, it was rare to find a skilled player. If your name was Sidney Crosby or Ovechkin, you were the rares. You were that rare fucking elite franchise player. Now you could get you, but that only came in the first overall. Then there was Evgeny Malkin. Then there was Eric Staal at the time too. But like you got Patrick Kane out of that. You got Steven Stamkos. Now you're getting elite talent in second round picks, third round picks, even sometimes fourth round picks, and they're coming at a consistent rate. It's just a matter of these teams having to find those players. But other than that, it was you built guys through like guys that were big, tough, didn't score goals, but man, they would hit you and punish you and all that. Like they're still hitting, but guys are so fast now that they avoid those hits. The game has changed. The game has gotten so fast that it's so hard to align yourself with a player down the middle and give him a clean center ice hit. It's because guys are able to dodge these players so quickly now. And back to the lack of rivalry feel between Montreal and Boston, it's because we haven't faced them in the playoffs in a long time now. I think that part has a play too, because from 2002 up until the last time we faced the Bruins in the playoffs, like we were facing them every fucking playoffs practically. Yeah. Every time we got into the playoffs by the skin of our teeth, first round, what was it all? It was always Montreal-Boston. Yeah. So that kept the rivalry alive. But we haven't had that type of playoffs in a while. We haven't made the playoffs in a while. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Listen, can you imagine after we beat the Leafs? When we beat the Leafs, after that, we kept going to the playoffs and we kept facing the Leafs in the first round all the time. Whether we win or lose, that rivalry would have been reborn from a fucking century ago. I'm exaggerating a century ago, because lately it's just been Montreal-Boston. But if Montreal were to face Toronto every time in the playoffs, let's say once the Canadiens are ready to make the playoffs and Toronto's still the team. Anyways, all that's like that rivalry is going to be reborn. But if it goes, but if again, if it's always Montreal Boston, that rivalry is going to be reborn again. They could come up with a new rivalry. Imagine they face Ottawa like every other playoff round in this division, yeah, because that's how the division is built. So, you know, those rivalries between Pittsburgh and Philly, why? They were always facing each other in the playoffs. Rivalry between Pittsburgh and Washington, Crosby versus Ovechkin, why? They were always facing each other in the playoffs. So the playoffs has a lot to do with it. And I think the league really tried to spark that again. It's just, you can ask Joey, we spoke about out. this division setup is, it's not working. It really isn't. Say your, go ahead.
No, before we continue that conversation, I want to go back to the actual game because I want to talk about it.
Well, we got a major turning point in the game that we have to talk about. That
I don't know if it's what I'm about to say, but
it's definitely it's the last play of the game, actually.
Okay, I'm not talking about that, but to me, it was, again, very conservative type game. Both teams were playing very cautiously for some odd reason. And, you know, Jordan Harris had an interview before the game. I was listening to his press on the way to the game. And they asked him, do you think it's going to be a high-scoring game? You know, you guys have been scoring goals and Boston's been scoring a lot of goals and whatever. Do you think that's going to be that type of game tonight, especially with the rivalry you had in the past and blah, 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 whatever? He's like, actually, no. If you notice how our team has been playing lately, it's been keeping it close and being conservative and just playing a very good hockey game. And our games ended, you know, 3-2, 2-1, and he's right.
Always by one goal. They played the most games where the difference was by one goal in the NHL. Like 34 or 35, something like that, I think.
Yeah. So he was saying it's going to be a close one. It's going to be very tight. And watching the game, it was exactly that. Both teams were playing very cautious. And it's weird because, I mean, Boston is making the playoffs. Montreal is just far from it. And you would expect like a free-for-all game, but yet it was just very tight. That being said, the one thing that stood out for me yesterday's game, which I was very surprised in, and I was like very shocked, is Armia. He played one of his best games in a really long time. And I was like, I was very surprised to see that from him. Now, maybe it's the ice time he's been getting in Laval this year that just he comes out shooting strong. I don't know, but yesterday's
him too, he's seeing a sports psychologist. So, and he's him and Jake Evans are our best penalty killers on the team.
Yesterday we had the double minor. Which I was very surprised that I didn't know that rule that they can.
For high sticking.
So I was very surprised. But again, you're at the last 7 minutes of the game. You get a double minor. The game is over, especially against a team like Boston with the talent that they have. And I was so happy to see that this team fought it and just sucked at the overtime. Like, especially when you're at the game, you know, you're at the game and coming from a Habs fan that understands that we want to lose and try to get the draft pick. Like, I went there with my brother-in-law saying, I hope you lose today. And my brother's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, no, you trade. As a Habs fan, you want to lose tonight and still compete. So it was a very good competitive game, and I just wanted to lose. But then you're at the game, there's overtime. You want to see that back and forth, and it was like 15 seconds in and it was over. I'm like,
fuck. So whose fault was it? Thank God Joey and Chris aren't here. We're gonna end. This is the final topic of the episode. But
so I was walking to my car and it was 320 messages between you guys. I didn't have a chance to go read it. So I don't know what your story is and what Joey's side is, or I don't know anybody's side. So I'm gonna come neutral here and not gonna pick sides because I don't know what I just ignored that whole conversation.
So
to me, I'll tell you who I think was wrong. Matheson as a defenseman in overtime 3-on-3, especially in that situation, you don't I think he went deep for nothing, and you left your skill players as defensemen, which I don't think, like, I think Matheson put Suzuki and Caulfield in the wrong position. They're not defensemen play. They're not defensive players. They're both offensive players. You have Matheson was one of our best defensemen, and it should have been Suzuki or Caulfield going deep, not Matheson. And I think Matheson screwed up there.
Okay, so I've been watching. Okay, so just for the audience, we obviously had this major talk in the group chat, like Anthony said. It was back and forth between Joey and Chris, and I came in, gave my two sentences here and there. So Chris is blaming Matheson. Joey is blaming Caulfield. So
who are you?
I told them, and then I actually spoke to Chris about it today, just him and I, and it's literally a chain of events of the right intentions ending badly. Okay? So you look at that highlight and you see when Matheson is coming on the right side, I forgot who it was. I don't know if it was a forward defense, but the Boston player that was right in front of him was completely flat-footed. So Matheson saw an opportunity to outskate him, and Matheson's a good skater. He had an opening, and he had to go for it. And I don't blame him for going for it. Now, it's easy for us to say he should have done this, he should have done that. Hindsight is always 20/20. So I'm going to use a bit of a different vocabulary here. Matheson, he actually beat the forward, right? It looked like he was going to cut to the net, right? But yep. I think at the very last second, the Bruins player nudged him a little bit where Matheson lost the puck. If you remember, he lost the puck for like a second, not even, retrieved it on his back end and continued to go behind the goalie, right? So looking at that, and that's where, so when you're trying to recover a puck on your backhand and then you're skating, you're making a left turn, you're a left-handed shot, you're going to slow down. And that's why the Bruins defense was able to get him along the boards. Again, hindsight 20/20, but another option that Matheson probably could have done was when he retrieved the puck after losing it, instead of making the left turn behind the net, maybe the better option would have been to just stay on your forehand, turn towards the boards on the right boards, and either pass it back to Caulfield or Suzuki, or even just get out of the zone, try again. But he didn't do that. So now, again, sports is all about instincts, right? Being at the right place at the right time. So now Matheson is caught along the boards, right? With the defenseman. Now it's up to Cole Caulfield's the next forward or the closest player next, right? So you see Caulfield skating and the puck suddenly becomes loose. And that's where Caulfield tries to go. And he's a right-handed shot, right? So he's trying to retrieve it on his backhand. But the Bruins defenseman whacks the puck towards the boards, clears it, retrieved by the third Bruins player that's all alone. He's not covered. He retrieves the puck 2-on-1. We know how it ends. Now, when we look at Caulfield, what could he have done? Would it have been better if he stood by the other Bruins forward that was waiting for that puck? Yeah, possibly. Or you stay somewhere along the left boards. Because number one rule in hockey, when you clear the puck, you clear the puck by the boards. You never clear the puck up center ice, right?
Yeah.
So
let's see if I can find the video. But
So again, when Caulfield tried to swipe the loose puck, he ended up skating towards the middle. And then the Bruins players broke out. Again, hindsight, maybe it would have been better if he would have stayed along the boards with that other Bruins player that was waiting for that loose puck. So again, it's Matheson saw an opportunity. It was a good opportunity. It just ended badly. Caulfield saw an opportunity to retrieve a loose puck. It was a good opportunity. Ended badly. So to me, that's why I say it was just a chain of events. It was if you ask Matheson, maybe he admit I didn't check the post game interviews. Okay, so maybe he would have said he messed up. If you ask Caulfield, maybe Caulfield would think I should have been positioned better to retrieve that loose puck. You know what I mean? I just on the overall, I'm just annoyed by this Mike Matheson bashing, though, like from a lot of fans, especially on Twitter. Like, he's the new whipping boy, and I'm kind of getting fed up of it. Like, Mike Matheson, in all honesty, like yeah, he's not the best quarterback on the power play, but fuck, he's top 10 amongst defensemen in points on the power play. He's top 10 amongst defensemen in goals on the power play. Like, he's top 10 amongst defensemen points, period. And he's top 5 amongst the average amount of ice time played. Like it's enough with the Mike Matheson bashing. Like, that's all I'm saying about that.
Okay, so being there, it happened so fast. So
right, the game is fast, exactly. The game is
very fast. So when I was there, it just happened too fast. And from what I saw at the moment, it was like, why did Matheson do that? But now when I'm re-looking at the game, you're right. It's a game of instinct. Like, we can't really tell who's at fault, because when you're on the ice, things are different. Now,
yeah,
I am seeing what Joey sees. Like, I don't think when it's 3-on-3, I don't think Caulfield should have went there, because that gave the opening for the again, it was a 3-on-1 originally. Then it became a 2-on-1, but it was really a 3-on-1 because Caulfield went deep to go help Matheson, which I think Caulfield should have just gave up on that play and just back off and just, like you said before, let's start this play over again. Matheson going into the zone alone with three players. We've seen it so many times in the past and we all hate this play, but this would have been a perfect example. You know that pass back?
Yeah, the drop back
and just start over to play. This was a perfect moment to do that. So do you want to blame Matheson for not doing it and just taking the risk of going in with three players when Suzuki and Caulfield weren't even close to coming and help? He was all by himself. So I think he should have dropped back. That's my opinion on that point.
Sure, but the problem is that, and I'm looking at it on my phone right here, is that he could have had a good shot. It's just he lost control of the puck on his backhand. Now, again, he tries to retrieve it and goes behind the net, but he has his head down. He can't see. If he wanted to drop it to anybody, he can't see at that angle. And so, do you risk giving the puck away if you don't know where your other two forwards are? I think that's another question that we kind of need to ask. Like, it's just the defenseman just shut him down perfectly behind the net and into the corner. They really did. Now,
do you see my screen? Is it working?
I think I could add it to our screen.
This is pretty
cool.
There we go. Let's watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it.
So look.
Look, pause right here. Pause. Okay.
So I know he was trying to beat the player, but why? You're alone with three guys. I think he should have just went back, passed back.
Here's where I think he should have made a turn. Play again. Yeah, nice and easy. So look, right there, he loses the puck. When he retrieves it, just a little bit more. Just go a little bit more. Right there. Instead of going backwards, taking on the backhand and going behind the net, he should have turned on his forehand into the right, go into the corner, and then he would have done that
right here. When you got
the
puck right here.
Right there, yes. He should have gone to his right, or maybe a better option would have been going towards the right. Stay on your forehand with your head up, and you'd be able to see where your other two players are.
So now here, this is where I believe Caulfield made a mistake. But then again, there's two players on Matheson. So maybe Caulfield, just seeing that one player alone, he didn't think it was a risky move to go there.
Again, I don't blame Caulfield for going, because look how close he gets to retreat. Look how loose. Look, the puck is loose. It's right there. We see it.
Yeah.
Look how loose the puck is. But the other defensive swipes it. Now, Caulfield pivots towards the right. Imagine if he would have stayed along the boards or would have pivoted to his left. Maybe he would have maybe nudged the other player and probably wouldn't have been a 2-on-1. Again, Shoulda, woulda, coulda. This is all hindsight. Hindsight is always.
I actually think you said it right. I think it was just the right instinct, just bad
finish, basically. Bad finish. Yeah. But that was the chain of events.
A right intention, just bad.
What did I say? The right intention was there. It just ended badly. That's all. Yeah. So, you like, who's to blame? I mean, it's probably easier to put the blame on Mathisson because he started the play. But three on three is a whole different
game, and it's so fast. Like I said, just watching this replay gave me a whole different view of this perspective. But at the game, I saw it so fast. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So, anyways, look,
it is a point. All we have to say is, like, man, the month of March, we all thought, forget it, the Canadians are going to lose so many games. They lose by one goal, against Tampa Bay. They beat the Nashville Predators by one goal, 1 point. Okay, they got their asses kicked against Carolina. That was to be expected. They only lost by one goal against Toronto Maple Leafs. They beat Columbus 3-0, and they only lost by one goal in overtime against the Bruins. The team is doing something right here. They're competing against the best teams, and they're not getting blown out of the water. Maybe against Carolina was just a bad game, but Carolina is one of the best teams in the league. Otherwise,
we're losing with them competing, and that's what we said at the beginning. What we want to see, and all we want to see is progression from these players individually. We want to see progression as a team. As a whole core, building that chemistry and that experience. And we just want to see them compete. We don't want to see a shitty team on the ice losing, like going on the ice and us watching this game like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I don't... Perfect example. Last year, or the year before when we tanked for Slezkowski, so it was the year before, you know, we lost pretty much almost every game. Mm-hmm. It was not a fun season.
No, it wasn't.
As a fan, like, I missed... Awful. You know, 80% of the season, and I'm a Habs fan. I only watched for the podcast, believe it or not. And I would watch more recaps than the actual game because I did not have fun watching that season.
Yeah.
And this season, and we said at the beginning, we want to do this season, we know we're not going to make the playoffs or maybe get close to it. We're not going to win. I just want to be able to stay home, watch the game the whole 60 minutes and actually enjoy watching it.
Yeah.
And this year, I'm sorry, even if the fans are disappointed in the standings or whatever, but those are fans that just want to win and win the cup, and that's all they see it. If you're a fan looking at the bigger picture, this is a perfect season. Okay. I'm sorry. You can shut on the team all you want, Joey and everybody else, but you know,
targeted Joey.
You can shit all you want, which is fine, you know, but I'm not saying we can't say they suck. They don't. They're learning as a young core, trying to build that experience and that chemistry. And this is a perfect season to see that. And I think we're going the right direction.
That's a perfect way to wrap it up. I think I'm good with that.
Perfect.
Awesome. So that's a wrap of the Curfew Boys podcast, folks. Please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It is free. Tell your friends about us. Help us grow this page and this love for this team and help us be part of a bigger Montreal Canadiens community. Do not forget, this episode is sponsored by Quick Feet. Q-U-U-I-K Feet. That's Q-U-I-K Feet.com. Type in Curfew Boys 10 all caps for your 10% discount on your purchase of the Quick Feet Souls. All our episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We are on Facebook, Twitter. Even though Facebook is dead, we're still there. Twitter, Instagram. You can be part of the conversation. Join the conversation anytime, anywhere throughout the season. I am Sammy with no longer Mr. Florida Man Anthony. Yep. Thanks for doing this, bud. We will see each other soon. Do not forget, folks, the Canadians are playing against the Calgary Flames on Saturday, March 16th. In Calgary at 7 o'clock Eastern time.
West Coast road trip right now.
That's correct. They start their West Coast trip for the next 5 games. So that's going to be interesting. Probably going to be late games too, but what can you do?
9, 10 o'clock games. Yep.
Exactly that. And thanks a lot for doing this, bud. Have a good night. We'll talk more in the group chat. Everybody, until next time.
Bye now.
Bye now. Good night.